I want to welcome all of you tonight to a very special offering. We have Fran Yardley sharing with us her keynote that she gave last June at the Healing Through Story New England Conference. And the title is Journeys to Transformation, her own journey through becoming a storyteller involved in healing story and understanding what that means. So I am so delighted, Fran, to welcome you and to turn it over with no further ado so we can use every precious minute in your wise care. So please welcome Fran Yardley.
Thank you, Lanny. What a joy to be with you all. It does feel a little strange, I have to say, but I'm going to just imagine that we're all sitting in a circle together in a room, and I'm going to imagine your faces, and that's how we'll proceed. So what I hope to be able to do in this very short time with you is to open up a little bit more the conversation of what is healing story. What does it mean? What does it look like? And who is it for? And even why is it important? And, you know, as I have explored all these, I know for a fact we may end up with more questions than answers, but that's okay, because without them, we're never going to learn what it is we need to know. So to start with, I want to tell you a story. And this is a story that will probably be familiar to a lot of you. Well, once the Buddha was approached by some of his disciples, "Oh, noble one," they said to him, "there are many scholars and wandering hermits in the marketplace who have traveled here, and they're in great discussion right now. They're arguing back and forth. They're asking, is the world finite? Is it infinite? Will our souls die when we do? Will they live on?" The opinions, they go back and forth, and we have no way of knowing what is the right opinion. Tell us, oh, noble one, what is the right opinion? And the Buddha told them a story. He said, once there was a Raja, and this man was sure that he knew all things. Well, one day, his brother, who he was accustomed to spending the evening with, said to him, "You know, it's possible that you don't know absolutely everything. For instance," said the brother, "I think it's possible that blind men can actually see things that seeing people cannot see." The Raja sat up straight, and then he decided that rather than be combative this evening, he would be amused. And he said, we'll see about that. I think we shall have an experiment. And, well, look out there, look out the window. I see an elephant, and that he is huge and gray and wrinkly. You see, I know all about an elephant. But what do you suppose a blind man would say about what an elephant is? Let us find out. And so he called a servant and he said, "Gather together all the blind men in the city and bring them to my courtyard, and then bring an elephant and show the men the elephant one at a time." So the servant did as he was bidden, and he brought the elephant, he brought the blind men, and the Raja and his brother sat and watched. "Ha," thought the Raja, "this shall be amusing. I know what an elephant is because I can see it. It is very large and gray and wrinkly. What more is there to know? These blind men, they cannot see. What will they say?" So the servant led the first blind man up to the elephant, and the man reached out and he felt the elephant's leg. And he ran his hand up and down the leg, and then he was brought to the Raja, and the Raja said, "Well, blind man, you have been presented with an elephant. Tell me, what sort of thing is an elephant?" The blind man said, "Sire, an elephant is hard and rough like tree bark. Yes, an elephant is like a tree." The Raja leaned back. "A tree?" He'd never quite noticed before just how sturdy and strong an elephant's legs were. "Call the next blind man." So the second blind man was led up to the elephant, and he reached up and he caught hold. It just happened to come by and hit his hand of the elephant's ear, and he felt of it. And then he came to the Raja, and the Raja said, "What sort of thing is an elephant?" And the second blind man said, "Ah, sire, and the elephant is graceful, soft, waving like a huge fan in the breeze." The Raja leaned forward. "Well," he said, "I never quite noticed the ear in that way before. It is soft and waving. Servants, bring an elephant to my garden after the next monsoon when the flying insects are about." The third blind man was brought to the elephant's tail and felt of it. And when asked by the Raja, he said, "Sire, the elephant is like a paintbrush. Indeed, with a paintbrush like that, oh, sire, I could paint for you such a picture." So that, the Raja thought, is something I'd never thought of before. And this set his mind to spinning. So one by one, the blind men were led up to the elephant, and they felt of the elephant and presented their conclusions to the Raja. And with each new answer, the Raja was more and more surprised by what he could now see an elephant was. And finally he said to his brother, "You know, the blind men have taught me. I now see what they see, and I know better what is an elephant." When the Buddha finished his story, he said to the disciples, "And so it is with these scholars and the hermits. As they say their opinions about this and that, they each see only their own side of things. It is as if they are blind. It is only when we look at what they all have to say and more that we will even begin to understand the true nature of what is." So this story, when I started thinking about writing the presentation I did for the Healing Story Conference and for tonight too, this story just kept coming back to me because I'm thinking, here we are, people who are interested in and were fascinated by healing story. And I picture us as all reaching out and feeling various parts of the elephant. And now we're gathering here to share. And I'm not going to go so far as to say we're blind, but we really do each work with healing story in our own particular way, in our own particular area, and we are somewhat isolated. We're each, in essence, feeling one part of the elephant, and it's kind of hard to get a sense of the whole animal. But tonight, we can listen to each other. I'm going to hold some time for that because I'm excited about that part, because we can listen to each other with respect and curiosity and an open mind to gain a new awareness of a greater part of the whole. And much like the elephant, there is no one perfect answer for what is healing story. I mean, for some of us, it's about grief work, and for others, it's about trauma or crisis or community building, how to handle a life-threatening disease or situation, and so many more things, all valid, all important. So I want to leave a good chunk of time at the end for us to have your voices heard and you to be able to share some of what it is that you do and you think. So I'm going to hereby acknowledge the enormous elephant in our virtual room and to welcome it and welcome all of you, and I'm glad you're here. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my part of the elephant, and it involves my own voyage with healing story. My journey down the healing story path really began June 27th, 1978. I had just recently begun to explore this intriguing thing called storytelling, and I was working in schools and libraries, festivals, conferences, the local prison up here. I mean, you know the drill. It's anybody who would have a storyteller. I was there. But on that day in June, my husband Jay was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease. And while that put a decided and mammoth blip on our radar screen, I still kept up my regular storytelling work. But from that day forward, consciously or unconsciously, I also began to work on stories which were, for me, in one way or another, healing. One of those stories was a true story about a young woman named Martha Revan. Martha had tuberculosis in the 1920s, and the story is about her desperation and her last resort decision to travel from New York City to the Adirondacks to spend the summer in the woods with a guide. She was a city girl, and this is what she did. And she discovered over the course of the first summer that she did this, she discovered the Healing Woods, which ended up being the name of her first book that she wrote. And after more than 10 years, she was cured. So there I was, with an ailing husband, living in the midst of those same Healing Woods, actually on the same lake that Martha stayed on for so many summers. And although I was unaware of this then, I know now that the story of Martha chose me. I couldn't understand why it took over 10 years for me to develop, and it wasn't until after Jay's death in 1984 that I finally understood that the whole time I was working on that story, I had this subconscious hope, this longing that perhaps by working on Martha's story, her happy ending could be ours as well. And while that was not to be, the story of Martha carried me into whole new worlds, into the world of hospice, to conferences where I told stories and presented keynotes and workshops, and it planted me firmly on the healing story path. So then it was at a summer NSN conference, I don't remember which one, where I attended my first Healing Story Alliance meeting, and I met Gail Rosen and Allison Cox and possibly others who are on this call. And I will never forget that meeting. It was about me finding my community. So, of course, I immediately joined HSA, and quite soon I was serving on the board, and then I became the newsletter editor. And in that role, I had the good fortune to connect with people all over this country and beyond who were doing fascinating and innovative work with Healing Story. And some of you are on the phone tonight, and I just think that's way cool. So around that same time, it may have been a little earlier, in 1999, I got a call from a friend asking if I wanted to be on the staff as a storyteller at a healing retreat for women. And given the path that I was on, it took me about 3 seconds to say yes. So that fall, in the height of the glorious autumn color of the Adirondacks, we had our first arts and healing retreat for women with cancer and chronic illness. And we've been holding these retreats every year since. I want you to imagine, it's a crisp fall afternoon. Over the course of several hours, 30 women have arrived at Great Camp Sagamore, a conference center in the middle of the Adirondack woods, perched at the edge of a wilderness lake. After the women register, they come into the greeting room, and as staff, we welcome them and encourage them to join us at tables strewn with colored pens and sparkles and stickers and magazines and scissors waiting to be used to cut out just the right picture to design their name tag for the weekend. Cynthia is tentative. This is her first time at the retreat. Her hair is very short, and the whites of her eyes have turned a muddy yellow from the damage to her liver and kidneys. But she gamely picks up a purple marker and chooses a magazine to look through. Other women around the table are talking as they thumb through magazines and work on their designs. One says, "Oh, look at these butterflies, they're perfect." And another says, "Could you pass the blue marker? It's my favorite color." Across the table, Madeline has been working quietly, but someone mentions a particular chemotherapy drug, and both Cynthia and Madeline snap their heads up. Their eyes meet, and they begin to talk. "So, did they give you..." "Oh, yeah, for way too long. Let me tell you about what it did to my gut." They are soon deep into their experiences with that drug, and then what kind of cancer they have, where they go for treatment, and how they're coping. Cynthia says, "You know, I feel like I'm in this long, dark voyage, and I don't even know where I am." I don't know my own body anymore. I've had to make these huge decisions about my health and home. And on top of that, I've just moved to a completely new area of the country, and I don't have any friends. So I ask all of you on the phone tonight, is that storytelling? Is it healing? In the evening at the retreat, after dinner, we gather in what's called the playhouse, which is a glorious room with a hardwood floor, a huge stone fireplace with a blazing fire, and a moose head watching over us all. And the women sit comfortably in a big circle, and they are listening intently. Mary tells of her three car accidents in addition to her breast cancer, and how each has compromised further her ability to function. Yet she seemed that night to march into the room with a wide-eyed joy and a twinkle of gratitude that she's still here to tell her story. She says, the funny thing about cancer is it just stops you in your tracks when you first hear the diagnosis. You slowly begin to realize that your cells have turned against you, and if you can't trust your cells, what can you trust? Then I realized I didn't want to talk about my cancer. If I talked about it, if I said the name breast cancer out loud, then I guess it must be true. So I'm asking you again, is that storytelling? Is it healing? When Mary says the words breast cancer out loud and then it must be true, she's claiming more of who she is. She can't change the fact that she has cancer, but by the very act of saying it out loud, by claiming it and how she thinks and feels about it, she is beginning to frame her own story. That is her healing story of the moment. This summer was our 13th year of retreats, and each year is a blessing as these women who are struggling with cancer and other chronic illnesses show up in every sense of that term, and they tell their stories. As the years go by and I watch these women return again and again, I have to ask, how does it happen? It's obviously having a positive effect on some very challenged women, but what is happening and why? What is healing story? Way back when I first started storytelling, I was coming from a theater background, and I believed storytelling was about entertaining people. So I'd find a story I loved, and I'd learn it. God, at the very beginning, I memorized it. Fortunately, that didn't last very long. And then I stood up in front of people, and I told the story and received applause. Well, I'm thrilled to say that over the years, that's changed a lot. But as I entered the realm of the retreat the first year, I did hold an image of what healing story was. I thought, well, a healing story is one which contains archetypal characters, rich images, a plot with an arc, and a satisfying resolution. It's a story that can induce a trance in the listeners, and they can reflect and take from the story the images that would speak to them, and they'll gain perspective and see they're not alone in their problems, and they may even go through a transformation. That all sounds good, doesn't it? So it was with this belief that I naively headed into my first year of the retreat back in 1999. And then reality struck. The fact of the matter is that at a retreat which lasts 48 hours and includes many art forms and is attended by 30 women, there simply is not enough time for luxuriously long trance-like stories. In addition to the storytelling workshop, we offer songwriting and dream work. We build a communal sculpture. We have journaling and yoga, and there's this chance to walk in the healing Adirondack woods and to canoe out to the middle of a loon-inhabited lake. So, reality. On that first Friday night after dinner, we gathered and we sat in a circle, 30 women plus the staff. And it didn't take me long to realize I had a choice I had to make. I had come prepared with my healing story. It was this gorgeous healing story that I wanted to tell. And it was weighted in one hand. In the other hand, I looked around the room, 30 women who had literally, some of them, dragged themselves into the room. They'd just traveled, some for up to a full day, but at least a couple of hours to arrive at this remote spot deep in the woods of the Adirondacks. And they were exhausted. But here they are finally. They've had dinner. It's 7:30 p.m. Some have had a hard time even walking up this small hill to get to the cabin where we are meeting. So we start. We sing a song to bring us all to the present moment. I welcome them all and congratulate them for actually carving this time out for themselves. We give them information about schedules for the weekend. You know, we do all the housekeeping details. And as all this is going on, I have in mind this gorgeous healing story that I'm going to tell them. It's all set to go. And then I really look around the room. I see each of these women who has a voice that needs to be heard and a story that they need to tell. In one hand, I'm weighing my perfect, gorgeous healing story. And in the other, I am weighing the voices of these 30 women. Guess which one wins out? Of course, I know it's not about me and my story. It's about them and their stories. So over the years, my quote-unquote gorgeous healing story has now been reduced on Friday night to a very short story, which I hope will offer images that will be helpful to them during the retreat and will inspire them in 5 minutes or less. Well, 1 year, those images came unexpectedly. It was already past 9:30. The women had just finished a stunning 2 hours of going around the circle and telling their stories, and they looked tired. So I decided to shelve my very short story, and instead I just really briefly told them of some reading I'd been doing about Pema Chodron. She was talking about the undiscovered bodhicitta, or noble awakened heart, in each one of us. And she said, imagine that we all have this gorgeous, stunning, fabulous, clear diamond buried deep inside of us. Each one of us has that. That's the good news. The bad news is, and I'm quoting Pema Chodron here, the bad news is that it is buried in shit. So after I said this to the women, I said, I suspect all of you know about the shit, don't you? There was enthusiastic nodding all around the circle. But, I said, do you know about the diamond? There was silence. And I said, I know about your diamonds, every one of them. And that's what I'm looking for all weekend and what I can't wait to find out about. And that is the image that stuck and was referred to and talked about all weekend and incorporated into their stories. So, was that storytelling? Was it healing? Every year on that Friday evening, even when I give more weight to the women and their stories and allow them to speak, there's still not enough time for each woman to say all she wants to say, but she gets the validation of knowing that at least part of her story has been heard. And she feels the power of being a positive influence as she listens deeply and validates the stories of others. On Saturday, we have the 3 workshops of storytelling and songwriting and dream work. And they are catalysts for these women to tell more of their stories. Some have gone home and buoyed by the rediscovery of their own strengths and potential for wholeness, they have drastically changed their lives. I don't have time to go into detail about it, but some of their stories are just amazing. So I keep asking, what is this? What is it that is working here? And for one thing, we as staff know that we are not the ones who do the healing. It comes from deep inside each woman. And our job is simply to provide the opportunity and to create the container to hold their stories. From the first meeting, these women know they are meeting in a safe place. And they know that what they say will be held in confidence and they will be listened to with respect without judgment. There is a fundamental belief in the innate wisdom and power, or the diamond, of each of these women. And I think this part is crucial because during the retreat, they're growing awareness that there's someone who believes in them just as they are, is like a door that opens so they can let their story out. They can't tell their story to a brick wall. Who can? And they can't tell their story to a brick wall that's falling in on them, but they can tell their story to someone who is psychically open-armed and filled with welcome and love and respect and curiosity. One thing I think that gets the story juices flowing is these women are talking to others who have gone through something similar. They're all members of what Jay called the Cancer Club or something analogous, and they all speak a language where no translators are necessary. And it's this is not something they're usually able to find in their regular lives, and they're ravenous for this kind of connection and conversation. So in all the different ways, whether they're in a workshop or standing in line for dinner or paddling, they may begin to tell a little more of their story, and slowly they begin to be the narrators of their lives. And as they do that, they get out of their own insular worlds, and they gain as much benefit from the listening as from the being listened to. They hear someone else admit her vulnerability, and it's a relief. They think, I'm not the only one feeling this or the only one who's gone through this. If she isn't perfect, I don't need to keep trying to be. I thought I was the only one carrying this burden. I guess not. So I'm going to wrap it up here, but I just want to say that the retreat, the whole weekend, is really like a gigantic story. And the stories come out of these women over in all the different ways, whether it's in dinner or creating the communal sculpture, helping someone up the hill, building a fire. And they come away with a story brewing and a song in their heads and a poem and the smell of wood smoke in their sweaters. They come away with a common story, and they come away knowing that they are no longer alone. So in a minute, I'm going to invite you to unmute yourself because I want to ask you, how about you? And what is healing story to you? What is your part of the elephant? Perhaps some of the things I've been talking about have inspired you to think about what you do with story and how it is healing, how you are making your own special mark in this unique field. And I'll say this. I feel that what we are all doing with healing story in whatever form it is something the world desperately needs. So I'm going to invite you to come on back and ask questions if you have them. But I'd love to hear about your part of the elephant and things you've experienced. What are your insights? And maybe not just what you do, but the why and the so what of what you do. I mean, what does it mean in the healing story world, and how do you perceive that it is healing? I'm throwing these questions out, whatever you want to latch on to, go with it. And think of the Raja who got to the point where he said, I used to think this, but now I see better. So I think we have a rare opportunity in 20 precious minutes or so for us to go a little deeper and to have a conversation and get more of the essence of how this thing called healing story happens. And I don't even know how many people we have with us right now, but to be sure everyone who wants to speak can be heard, if you can all just be mindful of that when you're sharing. And I will take on the role of watching the time and possibly inviting us towards the next person. So
I would also
opening
ask
it
people
up.
To share their name before they speak so we can know
yes.
who we're listening to. And I just want to thank Fran for raising these questions because I think this is at the cutting edge of where we all need to go and grow together. So I'm excited to have it unfold now.
This is Gail.
Gail, hello.
I came in a little late. I first want to say thank you. It was a wonderful story.
Thank you.
A story within stories. And I really appreciate having watched you grow into your work over all these years. It's been such an inspiration and a model of intention and presence and care and thoughtfulness and willingness to be open to seeing things differently.
Oh, thank you, Gail.
It's just brilliant, and I love you.
Love you right back.
Thank you, dear.
Gail, would you share for us just a little bit of what Healing Story means to you?
Well, I've always said that my little secret is, that HSA's little secret is that all story is healing, right? Even, you know, the guys with the southern accents and the guitars at Jonesboro who make everybody laugh and tell tall tales, they still, you know, getting everybody to laugh together and to be on a journey together is healing.
Absolutely.
So it all is in some manner or other. I don't think we're as separate as we seem to need to define ourselves in order to, you know, work on what we need to work on. I mean, it's appropriate to separate and define it and look into it from our perspective because, you know, we're blind in our way. And we need to explore that in order to get the richness from it. But I really think it all qualifies for me as healing story. My own particular part of the elephant is the grief work and also the Holocaust story work. And the grief work is expanding and shifting from, you know, bereavement over death to what I'm dealing with my father's illness and the loss of my mother through her illness. And as I am of a certain age, people around me who are ill, who are dying, and who I'm hanging out with and trying to accompany, and what I'm learning from them. And I know that'll grow into story and into offering those stories and listening to those stories from other people. I find that listening to story is a major role of the healing, quote unquote, healing storyteller. As Fran has too. I can tell a story at a bereavement group, and if I've told the right story and if the energy of the universe is with me, it sparks other people's stories, and their stories, of course, are the ones that need to be heard and listened to deeply and brought forth.
Yeah, Gail, when you're saying that, it's making me think that an important part of it is, you know, that if you might tell a brief story with the goal of hoping that you'll get other people to tell. And it's then remembering to, I mean, the second you see the spark lit anywhere is to know when to just be quiet. You know, whether it's that you've given them an appreciation or, you know, an invitation to tell a story. And so because that's, I think that's where the healing starts is when they start talking.
May I ask a question? This is Janet Carter, and
sure.
My voice is going to go in a minute, but let me frame it this way. When I've told in domestic violence shelters, I know there's a response, there's a community. However, I have never asserted enough time. You said it was a really hurried weekend. It was a full weekend. And would I be right in saying that really I should be thinking of a workshop? I mean, I can go in, I can get appreciation, they're nice, I'm nice, you know, there's a good feeling in the room, but I'm really more and more impatient because I think they need more time.
Janet, so when you're doing this, so am I understanding that when you go in, you're right now what you do is you tell stories to them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm only given an hour, perhaps, or less.
Oh, boy. Right.
So usually the women hang around and talk to me afterwards.
Uh-huh.
One wonderful woman looked at me, going back to something you said earlier, and said, are you like us?
Uh-huh.
Are you like us?
Uh-huh.
And I could pull something from my life
yeah.
that wasn't like them, but you know, she got it. Her eyes said she got what I was saying.
Yeah.
But but it just feels to me as though it's not enough. It's too safe isn't the right word. It's too contained. I think
I really need to go back
and say to the director.
Your awareness of that and your instincts seem really right on. And the fact that women are staying afterward to talk to you, it sounds like they are hungering to be able to tell their story. And perhaps you could tell, you know, like a little 5-minute story, like my substitute for my gorgeous healing story, what it became, and then have them, whether, you know, sometimes if you break them into pairs, for instance, it's not quite so intimidating, or you may get a sense that they're happy to talk as a whole group together.
So what kind of clearance would you think the staff there and the women themselves should, what kind of permission should they give when they come into the room? Do they know this is going to happen to them, that they're going to be invited to go to a place that may be really very deep and demanding?
Yeah, Gail, do you want to add something there?
Well, I just, you know, I haven't had the experience, but the caution lights that start flaring for me are just what you're thinking of, permission and awareness. So if there was possibility, you know, you could do your hour of storytelling, because that is valuable. It may not be enough, but it's extremely valuable that these women can be transported for an hour, that they can feel safe for an hour, that they can be somewhere together that feels delicious for an hour, and that the metaphors that are withheld, that are held in your stories, can be fertile in them. That is an incredible gift, and I would not make light of that. Then, if it would be possible to say, you know, anyone who wants to stay for another half an hour, 40 minutes, whatever you've got, whatever you can manage, can stay, and here are the ground rules, and then you've got to find a way to create safety, confidentiality. You know, you have to make sure that nobody expects that you're a therapist unless you are. You might want to think about working with a therapist in case things come up that may be difficult for people to deal
with. Well, that was my mention of staff. Would you ahead of time request that a staff person be present?
If there's somebody who you think would be good to work with, somebody who really understands what your process is going to be and what you expect from them, and what they can expect from you.
Yeah.
So that they know not that, you know, so that they're aware and you know that they're not going to shut people down and that there's not going to be damage done.
Does that help you, Janet?
Yes, thank you.
Well, there's, you know, I'd be happy, if you want to email, I'd be happy to email more with you about this, too, because I have some other ideas, too.
Okay.
And there may be, you might want to post something on the HSA list, because I know there's other people who are doing that work, and maybe they have some more practical and, you know, based on experience insights than I do.
Yep, Joan Stockbridge out in California would be a very good person for you to be in touch with about this. And I think she's on the HSA listserv. But email me, too.
I'm not going to take up precious time, but this is Susie Wolf in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
If you would like to email me, I have worked for years and years and years in domestic violence shelters.
Thank you.
So I might be, you know, I'd be more than happy. My phone number is 505-881-1220.
Thanks very much.
I love that.
And I leave town for a week next week, but, you know, please feel free.
Thank you, Susie.
Well, Susie, I know you don't feel like you should be talking. I don't know why, because you have a lot of very valuable things to say. I know that. And I'm wondering that in the work that you've done, have you seen yourself transform? Have you seen other people? I mean, do you have any thoughts about the questions I asked?
It's so hard to answer because it's like saying, oh, you went to the Grand Canyon? What did it look like? you know, it's like words almost can't describe it.
Yeah.
But story is everything to me. I mean, I am Cherokee Celtic, and I am guided in my storytelling, in my energy healing work, in my workshops. You know, there is a voice that I choose to call Creator's voice that literally will guide me. Tell this story. Don't tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
And just very briefly, one night, it was in women's lockup, my first night with them in this particular facility, and they were resistant and they were angry, and I kept digging in my bag for props, and Creator kept saying, tell the princess and the pea, and I said no, because they'll think I'm patronizing them, and no. And every time after a story, tell the princess and the pea, and finally I said, fine, but I just want you to know that if this thing goes south, this is all on you, because I was against it from the beginning. And so I told the princess and the pea, and they loved it, because I do kind of a funny version of it, and they hooted and clapped, and afterwards, when can you come back, wolf woman, when, you know, blah, blah, blah. One woman sat in a corner. I saw her bent over most of the night. She'd look up occasionally, and suddenly everyone was gone. They were going back to be locked in, and it was just this woman and I staring at each other across the room, and she said something. I couldn't hear her. Went and sat by her. Sorry, honey, I couldn't hear what you said. And she whispered, I'm in so much pain. I'm so sick, and I wanted to listen to the stories. And I said, it's okay. That's the wonderful part. You still heard, and when you need it, your spirit will give it to you, and story will come back to you. And she said, you don't understand. My favorite story in the entire world is The Princess and the Pea, and I haven't heard it since my grandmother told it to me when
God.
I was 8 years old. And she began to cry, and she said, how did I get here? What happened to me? And so she sobbed, raking sobs. And I put my arm around her, and we rocked. And I didn't say anything. I started to say, I opened my mouth to speak, and I heard Creator's voice saying, shh. So I didn't say a word. And finally they came and took her. The therapist walked me out to the elevator. She said, okay, I need to know, what did she say to you? And I told her. And she said, she's right. She's really sick. She just got out of detox. She's in bad shape. She is physically in agonizing pain. And I have got doctor's orders. I can give her Demerol. But I can't do it unless she asks for it, because they can't hold them down and force them. She said, Susie, you are the first person she has spoken to in the 2 weeks that she's been here.
Wow.
Now we can start helping her. And I went out to my car, and I said, now I understand the difference between thy will be done and, oh, all right, have it your own damn way. And I have never questioned that voice ever again.
Mm.
And I've never gone wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not bragging. It's not me. It's
no,
never me.
Uh-huh.
It is story coming through me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aho.
So you opened her door for her.
Yeah. To talk. And
yeah.
Now she could start saying, I need help, I need
yeah.
Demerol,
yeah.
I need help. How did I get here? What happened to me?
Yeah, right, wow.
You know, her life was wrecked. She'd, you know, been a drug addict, turning tricks, and she was very young. I mean, this was the beginning of a whole new thing for her,
mm-hmm.
and story did it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best work I did that night, second to telling the princess and the pea, finally, was sitting there being quiet.
Yeah.
And listening when that voice said, shh, I'm working.
Yeah. So, you know, something I think I'm becoming more and more aware of is, and I kind of asked it, is, you know, what have you experienced and how is it transforming to you and to the people you work with? And I think that's a perfect example of how it that was really transformative for both of you.
Oh, it changed me forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I am so grateful.
And it's also such an example of listening, Susie.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, you listened well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now my wolf ears are straight up. Creator said, read the phone book. I'd say, you have yellow pages around? I mean, I don't question it. Because something bigger than me is at work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just the vehicle.
Yeah. So anybody else have something? We have a few more minutes that we could share some more.
Brian, this is Diane Rooks.
Diane, hello.
How are you? I'll just say that my healing story work began with bereavement after the death of my son, and then went into more cancer wellness because after I had cancer. So I've kind of let where I've been in life kind of lead me to where I go. And I found out that whenever I tell a story, a personal story about my own experience with the death of my son or with having cancer or whatever it is, but not go on and on and on with it, but just tell it. It may just being letting myself be vulnerable and telling my story seems to trigger and open other people up, give them permission almost to tell theirs.
Yeah.
Because usually the minute I'm done, then the floodgates open and people begin telling their stories, which I think is what you were saying a while ago about being in the hospital, the shelters. You feel the need that they have to do that. And sometimes just telling a simple personal story that makes you vulnerable gives them permission to open up and tell theirs.
Yeah. Yeah. Diane, do you remember the first time that happened for you?
It was probably at a compassionate friends meeting after the death of my son, and the first many times I went, I didn't even say a word. I just sobbed hysterically because I couldn't speak. But I heard other people, and I listened, and I heard other people saying it, and then eventually became a facilitator and had a chapter in St. Augustine, Florida. And I think people that would come in there in such pain and such when they hear somebody else tell a story of their own personal journey and pain, it's so freeing for them to feel like that somebody else understands and that they can be heard. And again, it's a part of what you have to do is listen. You can listen a story out of somebody when they start saying it. If you're listening intently, then they can hardly stop telling it once they get started.
Yeah. Yeah. It you know, you're telling that, it's reminding me of when, you know, I think the older I become, the more I'm understanding that the more I am open about who I am, no matter what it is, and not trying to be perfect in any way, shape, or form, and boy, what a relief that is.
You got that right.
You don't have to do that. But I remember when Jay was going to Johns Hopkins in treatment, and I was a storyteller at the time, and so part of my defense mechanism when I went with him was to look around for places to tell stories. And they said, why don't you go to the kids' psychiatric floor in Johns Hopkins? And I said, okay. So I went up to the kids' psychiatric floor, ninth floor up. You know, you get off, and everything is suddenly subdued and carpeted and dark brown. You know, they've got as low impact as possible. And these kids came in and sat down on the floor, and I sat down on the floor with them. And as one kid was hiding behind the others, and I told a story, and he just kind of would peek out every once in a while. So it was just some kind of instinct that made me start getting really silly. And I just got ridiculously silly. And so by the third story, he was in the front row, and by the fourth story, he was sitting in my lap. And just something about what is the quote? It's ring out the bell. It's a Leonard Cohen. Ring out the bells that still can ring. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Mm.
And that if we show our cracks, how much easier it is for somebody else. And it's, I think that's just exactly what you were saying, Diane.
Right, right. I agree.
Yeah.
In fact, having heard you, I think, say that Leonard Cohen verse many years ago, I almost always start my presentations or whatever they workshops with that.
Uh-huh.
And we've all got that crack. Let's honor the cracks that we have.
Right.
Well, instead of
right.
The bells are still coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hi, it's Carolyn Martino.
Hi.
I'm never going to talk, you know. I always think I'll just listen, and then I get moved to say something, and then I think, oh, why did I ever say that? But, you know, I've started to do this story about my face, you know, my birthmark, and it's taken me over 20 years to do this story, and it's a really hard story to tell. But years ago, 20 years ago, I was living in New York, and I discovered performance art, and I thought, oh, wow. And, you know, it was very personal. It was storytelling. I didn't know storytelling then. And I was going to this women's group, and they wanted me to do stand-up. I was doing stand-up at the time, and they said, come up and do some stand-up. It was going to be a fundraiser. But I saw this performance art, and I thought, I had this birthmark my whole life, and you know, I was in my 50s, and no one ever lets you talk about it. You can't.
Oh, wow.
They won't. They're afraid, or they uncomfortable. They feel like they have to fix you. And because of this performance art stuff, which was so personal, I thought, gee, I wonder, and it was going to be basically a group of women, and I thought, I wonder if they would be interested in this for freak value. Like, I wonder if they would be interested in what it was like growing up and wearing this makeup, because I wore makeup for 12 years trying to hide this thing. And so I wrote it. I never told stories. I never heard a story talking. And I wrote this thing, and it poured out of me. It poured. And I was still writing it, driving up. It was in Western Massachusetts, and I read it. I read this piece, this 40-minute piece, just because I thought they might be interested in hearing from a freak. Well, I have to tell you that the response was overwhelming. I mean, everybody had something they were hiding. I didn't know that. And I was in my 50s. Oh, whatever. Well, oh, maybe. And it was the first time in my whole life that I ever felt a part of the human race.
Oh, man.
I had always felt so alienated because I never saw anybody that looked like me.
Right.
Now 20 years of storytelling has gone by, and I have completed this piece. Believe me, there's no happily ever after in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel so, I mean, I want to put it on the shelf, but I am so compelled to tell this story. And I've told it several times now, and the emails that people send me, anyway, I'm going to continue to tell it because first it healed me by telling it, and now it's healing others because they're all hiding. Everybody's hiding something.
Oh, yep.
So anyway, I really don't know how to, where to tell this or how to market it or whatever, but I feel so much that the reason that I'm not dead yet is because of this story.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there you go, ladies and gents. I'm gonna mute now.
Well, I may be the only, I don't know if I'm the only one on the call who's ever heard the story of Gail again. but I have the gift of hearing it, and it is magnificent and brilliant and just moving in ways that
Who said that?
Gail.
Oh, hi, Gail. Hi.
Hi, Carolyn.
My roommate.
Yay.
And I want to hear this story.
It is just fantastic, unbelievable, and just such a unique and brilliant.
I have to talk
feeling.
Myself into telling it every single time.
I
because
bet you
it
do.
Feels
I mean,
so
courage to do it.
I was going to say self-indulgent, but it's so hard to tell that it's not self-indulgent, really. And I keep getting these responses from the people that hear it that are beyond belief. I feel like I was born to tell this. That's why I look like this. Because I am an artist, and I can tell it with artistry, not in any way to say what an artist I am. No, I can tell it. So I get that thing about, Fran, that you went there and found that your beautifully prepared story was not what that situation called for. And every time I do this, I think, gee, should I be telling this 50-minute piece? Should I open it up? I don't know what to do. I have this story, and it's
material. You need to keep telling.
I don't know what to do with it yet, but there it is, and I know it needs to be heard. I feel I never felt that way about anything else I've ever done.
You're
and I think I'm a pretty good storyteller, but I don't have anything that most other good storytellers don't have. But this is different. So,
have you ever submitted it to a Fringe Festival?
Years ago when I was only doing like that first act part of it, mm-hmm. I sent a thing in, but in my heart I really didn't want to do it because I felt it wasn't complete. It felt like I left people in the middle of it,
right.
And
well, it
I didn't want to leave them there anymore. So then I stopped telling it.
Yeah.
And then I think they picked names out of a hat and I didn't get picked.
Right.
So no,
right.
I never submitted it again. Anyway, I didn't mean to make this about me. I'm going to mute now so somebody else can talk, all right? Thank you for listening to that. Bye.
I thank you so much for telling that story. I mean, just even hearing that story here on this phone call is healing. And it's like Susie talking about the princess and the pea. I mean, you never know who you're touching, and you may not know at the end, but in your case, it's pretty dramatic, and people are getting back to you, which has got to have a healing quality to it all by itself. So I really hope you continue to tell it, and I want to hear it. That's all I know. And I'm chagrined to see that it's 10 o'clock.
Fran?
You've brought
yes?
it to such a wonderful place, and I was just struck after listening to that exchange of how in that process of storytelling in that sacred space, something happens that shifts not only the listener, but the teller, and sometimes the story itself. And it's a powerful triad. And
yeah.
Thanks for bringing us deeper into it.
Oh, this is I couldn't have asked for better, because you all shared, and we had a kind of a conversation, which is really what I was hoping to be able to do, and I hope it can continue in some way or another.
Well,
but
Fran,
go ahead, Gail.
This is Susie. Before you get away,
yeah,
I wondered if it would be okay. Tomorrow night, I every month I go to tell stories to guys that are felons.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell that story about the the sage with the diamond and gives it to the pepper and so forth.
Yes, please do. It's Pema Chodron. She's a Buddhist nun.
P-E-M-A-C-H-O-D-R-O-N. Well, your thing that you said about that there's a beautiful diamond inside everyone, but it's buried in shit?
Yeah. Yep.
Is it okay if I use that?
Yes, and I'm telling you who to attribute that to. Her name is Pema. It's an unusual name. P-E-M-A Chodron, C-H-O-D-R-O-N.
Thank you so much.
Yes, it's got oatmeal quality. It sticks to you. That particular story. So we don't always know how the healing happens. It's a mystery, but that's okay.
I also want to give everyone a little insight that the pre-conference at the National Festival this late June in Cincinnati is going to have this very focus. It's going to be about bringing all of our voices together to explore what healing story is, how we use it, why it's important, and what happens when we do it. So I hope many of us will join the Healing Story Alliance for a full day of having just this kind of conversation. It would be great to have you.
Great. Thank you so much. This is Joe.
Great.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
It's been absolutely
wonderful. Thank you, Fran. It was wonderful.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much, Fran.
Thank you, Fran, so much.
Thank you, Lanny.
Good night, all.
Good night.